You are listening to The Big Breakfast Blah on WLR with thanks to Coffee House Lane. It is my tremendous pleasure to say that my esteemed guest this morning was pretty much the backdrop to every heartbreak I think I ever had as a teenager and beyond. The one and only Mr. David Gray. David, good morning.
Good morning.
White ladder. Before that landed, I can't possibly tell you what I did with all of the big feelings that I had when that landed in 1998. Nobody could have predicted A, that it was going to become the best-selling album in Irish history. 25 times platinum status. Our love affair with you, David, in Ireland started from then and it has never, ever left.
It was an amazing feeling because it was a kind of backs against the wall moment. I mean, the story had started a bit earlier. I mean, I'd made a sort of a few fans there from the very word go with the support of Donal Deneen and Donal Scannell. They put these early shows on and my first album, second album, third album, it was growing. There was a real passionate fan base. So it wasn't that we just dropped the sparks of White Ladder onto nothing. They dropped onto some tinder that was already there. We pressed up a few thousand copies. We headed over to Ireland to see what was going to happen. We booked some shows. I remember the very first gig, which was in Sligo, on that first White Ladder tour, and playing Babylon, Sail Away, Please Forgive Me, just watching the people immediately getting it. I'm thinking this is unusual. We're not just sort of introducing new music. It's sort of immediately been accepted. And the songs had a magic. We kind of let the songs do the work to a certain extent. Well, we were working with electronica, so we couldn't get too overexcited and speed up. We had to stay in with the groove. So that was quite an education. But yeah, just from the word go, there was a magic in the air, and that whole tour had a sort of magical quality, and it sort of set the scene for what was going to just continue then for the next few years.
What particularly touched me, because you're talking to somebody who, when I was growing up in my formative years, I was maybe a Smashing Pumpkins head, I was a Radiohead person, I was that sort of teenager. And when I heard your music, it forced me to slow down. It spoke to a part of me that I couldn't quite vocalise myself. There was this emotional intelligence. It was, you saw my heartbreak, you heard it, and you helped me. How did you navigate that? Because I've seen photographs of you over the years in your spare room, I think I'm right in saying, in your home, and you were sitting there creating this early content. Where did you find all this emotional intelligence to create something so beautiful, David?
All I was just trying to do was make the best songs I could make with what I had at that particular time, something that represented everything I felt and the time that I lived in. It was a humble process, really. It was never dressed up as being anything. We didn't have either the money, the situation, or the wherewithal to consider that what we were doing was going to be really important. It was important to us. We were just trying to make the best thing that we could make. All I would say about the process was it was very open-hearted, very open creatively. Singer-songwriters can be quite kind of intense and in their own little world, not wanting to let their precious workings be contaminated by the evil forces out there. But with this, I allowed everybody working in the room to kind of throw in ideas, to change things, to radically change things in places. So there was an openness, and what happened was this sort of hybrid form that was the result of this process was stronger. And in fact, in a way, it was more mine than it was when I was just keeping it to myself.
England has claimed you, Wales has claimed you. I think it's very safe to say that Ireland has entirely claimed you as one of our own, David, and that must be a really nice feeling.
It's incredible because from the very word go, Ireland has something that we've lost over here. There's lots of things that are very common, like the sense of humour, the kind of lack of nonsense, the sort of the bring you down to earth kind of salt of the earth vibes. There's a lyricism and a respect for writing and music that's sort of very hard to get off the ground. Here it's, if you've ever seen a rugby league game, after the player's tackled someone, he rubs his face down into the dirt as he's getting up. That's kind of the English style. Oh yeah, who do you think you are? You know, why is this important? Whereas in Ireland, there seems to be there's wind to fill the sails. There was just from the word go, I connected with a place where poets get to speak in Parliament or whatever, you know what I mean? There's something unique, and the way that time is felt and experienced and conversation is prioritised. and respected, communication is different. Whatever it was just a perfect fit for me. I've never been able to completely work it out. I'm from Manchester, and when I play my hometown, that's a big thing. It's a no-nonsense town. It's gritty, it's real, and they go completely ape if they feel like it. I love the place, but the island has become my kind of spiritual home in terms of where my music is listened to and allowed to be something. It always was from the very beginning. It's one thing when you're already successful and everyone tells everybody this is important, but it's another thing when people decide of their own free will that they think something's worth listening to. And I've always been given a chance there. So yeah, it's what can I say? What a ride it's been from 1994, playing in the first couple of shows in Ireland at Whelan's and down in Cork to today. It's still going on, still an amazing thing.
And it is still going on because fresh off your performances earlier this year, you will be down in the NEC in Killarney on the 27th and 28th of August. But I do have questions, and you absolutely knew I was going to ask about this. The Three Arena, you made headlines, and I thought, David Gray never makes controversial headlines. What's going on here? I firmly believe there's a certain kind of behaviour depending on what's being played. And at a David Gray concert, it's an ethereal experience. It's a life-affirming, you know, soul-searching experience that your own memories are brought to the fore. It shouldn't be an event where there's rowdiness or bawdiness or any such things.
What happened was people got a bit drunk, and a certain proportion of the crowd were impossible to control. And there's a sense of entitlement. But it was more that night. There was a kind of, I dare I say, a kind of febrile atmosphere almost. Why is anybody's guess? It was a Saturday, first beautiful day of the year. People have been drinking all day. That was definitely a big part of it. You know, Leinster had just won 60-0 or something in the rugby. There was a whole load of vibes going into it. But we live in a world where we're being made to feel very vulnerable and very anxious. And I feel that there's a lot in the atmosphere. There's a lot of bad things going on. There's a lot of nonsense spoken by world leaders and world wannabe leaders. A gig can be like a lightning rod. Suddenly all this stuff comes together. But maybe people have more of an entitled attitude these days to their own experience, and they're not very respectful, whether they're on public transport or whether at a gig or whatever they are. You know, I wouldn't expect that of Ireland. I've seen it in other places. It was raucous, and there was nothing I could do. At one point, I did a kind of teacher routine, and I banged my keyboard and said, "Will you just shut up for a couple of minutes? I'm trying to tell you something here." From my heart, it wasn't easy to share. If the gigs are too rowdy, you take away the intimacy of the experience. So ultimately, it's less of a gig. Listen, if you said, "Do I want a load of people sitting like grannies in their seats, you know, virtually knitting their way through 2 hours, or do I want people to be up on their feet going, yeah, you know?" I'd say up on their feet, please. You can't be too picky. But that night was unusual, and I don't really fully understand why. The next gig was business as usual. We played the Three Arena a month later, and it was like you'd expect it to be. I was careful about what I said, as I say, because to me, this is part of the game. Every night's different. You've got to deal with what's in front of you. So,
but exciting times looking ahead to the INEC in Killarney. A reminder on those dates, it is the 27th and 28th of August. How are ticket sales looking, David? They always fly out when you are performing.
It's going well, yeah. I think there's a few tickets for the second night. Yeah, this tour has been so special. It's gone beyond what I was hoping it would be. On a personal level, I'm about to turn 57. My dad was just 57 when he died. So there's some kind of emotional mortality reckoning going on, and contextualizing some of the music I've written and talking where these things actually come from. It sort of enriched the whole gig. We've been going very deep into the whole back catalogue as well. So there's the new stuff, all the big stuff, and then sort of a deep dive into different albums from the past. We've been very sort of present, emotionally present, taking risks on stage, playing songs we haven't played for a while, to be putting something real into the room alongside, you know, the big moments where everyone's just going to celebrate you playing the big songs.
You're about to turn 57, and there's a poignancy with that, David, when you take personal grief. You can never maybe not think, you know, what if?
Yeah.
Do you feel you're where you want to be at this time in your life, David? I mean, what does life look like for David Gray, the family man, the man at home at 57? What does that look like?
I've been incredibly fortunate, and I've got a wonderful family and friends. I've got the wealth to enjoy life, and I've got the work that keeps me going that I love so much. So I've got it all, really. But also throw in that I'm just as confused as I ever was. So I'm working my way after a tour like this. I literally am sort of putting myself back together. It's almost like each time you've made a record and really made a record, put everything into it, and then done the tour, you sort of need need to be born again. And that process is uncomfortable and engenders a whole set of questions and doubts each time. And they have to be gone through. There is no easy path to the next things. But I think that's life too. And I struggle with sort of domesticity sometimes, especially when I've been hauling myself around the world at some ridiculous rate. It's difficult to get into the sort of stationary mode.
Of who loads the dishwasher and who's hanging the laundry out on the line.
I am very good at loading dishwashers. I failed as a waiter. I was basically a washer-upper in my younger life. It was one of my first jobs. I am meticulous dishwasher. To see a badly loaded dishwasher, that's going to upset me.
Tell you what, when you're in Killarney, I'll give you a call and I'll get you to come and inspect the dishwasher. David Gray, it has been an absolute pleasure and a real bucket list moment to meet you, albeit virtually. Thank you for everything you have done for young Dimfna, who had loads of big emotions and didn't know what to do with them. I wish you every continued success. It's been such a pleasure. Thank you, David.
Thank you.